They will say that I have shed innocent blood. What's blood for, if not for shedding? With my hook for a hand, I'll split you from your groin to your gullet.
Discovered a cure for the common Craig. A horror, trash, sci-fi, action podcast. Allow this to be your cure as well. The summer of Clive.
Welcome, listeners, to the summer of Clive. Welcome, Nicole, to the summer of Clive. Nicole, who is Clive?
Clive Barker.
Clive Barker. What is Clive Barker doing, Nicole?
He's a writer.
He's a writer?
He writes screenplays.
Yes, also a screenwriter. So he's an author, like he writes novels?
He writes novels.
Short stories.
Yeah, short stories.
I believe he's even done some comic books.
Some books.
Screenplays.
Yes.
What else has he done?
Directed?
Yes, he's directed. He's done some theater work.
Yes.
He started out doing some theater work, and then he's also directed films.
Yes.
Hollywood films, motion pictures. He's also an artist. Like, all of those things make you an artist, but he's also a painter.
He's a painter.
And, other forms of physical media art.
Okay.
Probably some drawings.
And
things like that. Yes, he does as well. Clive Barker he's always been kind of a favorite of mine.
Yeah, I remember when we first were discovering things we liked about each other.
We liked about each other.
When we're just chatting about, things
chatting.
We liked. Yeah.
Chatting.
I remember he was one of your favorite authors when you were in high school.
Sure.
And I remember that. And I think that was one of our first dates, was watching, a movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Do you even remember what movie we watched?
I don't.
We watched Nightbreed.
Did we?
We did.
That was an early thing that we watched?
Yeah.
I really don't remember watching that so early.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. But Clive Barker, and let's pause for just a second here. Usually at the beginning of an episode, we'll kind of chit-chat for a little bit. We're going to save that for the end. We're going to postpone the chit-chat for the end. We're just going to get right into the summer of Clive.
You're going to go right to the meat?
Right to the meat.
Okay.
Yes. Clive Barker would appreciate that.
We'll get
right in there to the meat. So, I'm going to give the credit to our friend Troy for the idea of the Summer of Clive, actually.
Okay.
Troy, he's one of the best people I know, probably. So
he's a pretty good guy.
So, I was talking to him about episodes we were going to be doing this summer.
Uh-huh.
And I mentioned our bee episode, Adorable Animals All Out Attack, featuring the bees. And he brought up, the movie Candyman.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah. And I think I even said, yeah, that's a good idea. And, it's kind of timely, too, because I think at the end of our last episode, when I was teasing this one, I said, they're going to be remaking, or it has been remade, and they're just waiting to release it. I don't know if it's necessarily a straight-up remake, though. I think it might just be, a new Candyman story.
Okay.
So, I'm not sure exactly. I've been trying to avoid, spoilers and reading too much about it. I don't like to do that, usually. I like to try to go in as cold as possible.
I like to go in blind, too.
Yes. I feel like it's much better that way. Otherwise, you ruin things for yourself. So, yeah, I haven't watched a trailer, if there's a trailer. I'm sure there probably is. I haven't read what it's about or anything like that. So, yeah, I don't know if it's a straight-up remake or just another Candyman type of story. Anyway, it's called Candyman. And as of this recording, I think the last I heard is supposed to come out in October, which would be kind of fitting. So, yes, it's kind of timely to talk about the original Candyman from 1992, right, when this new Candyman, 2020, is going to be coming out fairly soon. And there are other reasons why it's kind of, you know, timely as well, but we'll get into that later. Anyway, so let's talk just a little bit, and we're going to do a series of these. That's the idea, is to do a series of, like, probably four episodes, unless we get, like, really tired
for
or something.
For the Summer of Clive.
For the Summer of Clive. So a series of four Clive Barker-themed episodes. Okay, so the first one, spoiler, everybody, you saw it in the title and we just said it, is going to be about Candyman. But yes, let's talk about Clive Barker.
Don't say it five times, Craig.
Well, yeah, and don't look in the mirror while you're doing it, I guess. So, yeah, Clive Barker was born, Nicole, October 5th, 1952.
Okay.
And he's a Brit, Nicole. Did you know that?
Is that why you said drawings?
Drawings, I guess. Yeah, I just said that for fun.
I don't know. That wasn't a very good English accent,
though. No, I wasn't trying to do an English accent.
Oh.
Now I feel shamed. But I didn't even try. I was just saying drawings. Anyway, so yes, Clive Barker was born in Liverpool. Do you know what else happened in Liverpool, Nicole?
What?
The Beatles were formed there. Anyway.
I wasn't even thinking about
music. You weren't thinking about rock and roll music, huh?
I wasn't right now.
But yes, Liverpool is where Clive Barker was born way back in 1952. I shouldn't have said way back. That'll make him feel old, Clive Barker. I'm sorry. But he was the son of Joan Ruby, a painter and school welfare officer, and Leonard Barker, a personnel director for an industrial relations firm. Doesn't that sound exciting?
Yes.
Yes. He eventually attended the University of Liverpool, where he studied English and philosophy. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And here's just another quick little fact about Clive Barker. You ready? Here it is. This is some trivia. Maybe we'll throw in like a bit of trivia into each of the episodes. Here's one for you. When Clive Barker was 3 years old, he witnessed the French skydiver Leo Valentin plummet to his death during a performance at an air show in Liverpool. Barker would later allude to Valentin in many of his stories.
Well, that's not funny.
That's kind of a tragic thing to witness when you're 3 years old, Nicole.
Yeah. Well, and then you always think, like, when you're three, do you really have true memories, or you're just remembering what people have told you that... Do you remember that? You know, they ask the question, do you remember that? And people really don't remember. They're just remembering the last time that they reminisced about it.
Yes, possibly. Anyway, whatever you say. I don't know, Nicole. I don't know. Anyway, so Clive Barker, he kind of started out doing some theater work.
Okay.
And didn't really start writing until like his early 30s, I believe, is when he kind of started writing like stories. And then later, novels. So, from 1984 to 1985, I couldn't get a more specific date for certain stories. I was kind of frustrated about that. But the Books of Blood, volumes 1 through 6, were published sometime during that range of 1984 to 1985.
Okay.
So
those are a collection of short stories.
Yeah, those are all collections of short stories.
So just an anthology.
Yes. Books of Blood, Volumes 1 through 6. So, what we're going to be talking about today, Nicole, is the movie Candyman from 1992. That is based on the Clive Barker story, The Forbidden, which was in Books of Blood, Volume 5.
Okay.
And it was also in, because they didn't really release the Books of Blood in the United States initially as the Books of Blood, at least to my knowledge, they did not. They released like some of the stories in other collections, and there were at least two that I remember. One of them was called The Inhuman Condition, and then the one that The Forbidden was in was called In the Flesh.
Right.
So then later on, I was able to get my hands on like actual, like a volume, collected volume of the Books of Blood from like the quality paperback book club or
something
like
that.
But I ended up getting rid of that one because I found little paperback versions with actual, like, Clive Barker artwork on the front covers of each of them, and they're kind of cool. So I kind of, like, I traded up for those in my mind.
Yeah.
Anyway, so The Forbidden, like I said, couldn't pin down a more exact date, but sometime between 1984 and 1985, it was published, apparently. I'm not sure exactly when he wrote it. The Forbidden, I did go back and reread, sort of in preparation for this episode, just to kind of, in my mind at least, kind of compare the actual story
to the movie.
The movie, yes. And it is much closer than I remember.
So did he actually write the screenplay for
Candyman? He did not. Okay. No, and we'll get into that in a moment. But he has done some other screenplays. Now, yeah, this wasn't the first movie that was done as an adaptation for a Clive Barker story. No. It is kind of an early story that was done by him. And yeah, rereading the story, it's, you know, I was talking to another loyal listener, our number one fan, Adam. I was talking to him about Clive Barker via text. And I was talking about how, you know, he doesn't really write much anymore. Clive Barker doesn't really do a lot of writing.
Well, he was doing
anymore.
A lot of children's.
Well, he did do, yeah, the series? Aberrat, I believe is what it's called, something like that. He was doing that. And yeah, he's done some other things, but he hasn't done a lot of writing in recent years overall. He's kind of, you know, just kind of like, I don't know, stopped doing it as much. And talking about that with Adam, I said, you know, I feel like in my mind,
Or stopped publishing.
Right, maybe he has a bunch of things that he's written that he just hasn't published.
Who knows?
You understand what I'm saying,
I do.
My goodness. I was talking about how in my mind, like, I feel like when somebody doesn't continue to write things, like, you just kind of, like, almost write them off in your mind or something. You kind of like, oh, you know, were they really that good? You know, maybe those stories that I read back in the past, maybe they weren't even really that great. You know, you kind of, like, say, like, maybe it kind of helps you, like, cope with the fact that, you know, like, they're not doing that much anymore. Okay. You're just kind of like, oh, okay, you know, maybe it wasn't that good. But going back and rereading The Forbidden, man.
Are you excited?
For like a 56-page short story or something like that, it's really well written. It's really good. It's got some nice creepy elements. And like I said, it's actually pretty close. The movie expands on it, really.
Yeah.
There's more detail in the movie, and some things have been changed to kind of localize it. So, the movie Candyman, yes, from 1992, was released October 16th of 1992, rated R, Nicole.
Okay.
Yes. And it is a horror film, Nicole, according to IMDb. It is a horror film.
Okay. What's the synopsis?
Let's check out the synopsis at IMDb, Nicole. The Candyman, a murderous soul with a hook for a hand, is accidentally summoned to reality by a skeptic grad student researching the monster's myth. So, Nicole, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's pretty to the point.
At a very basic level, that's kind of what happens. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot more to it, of course.
It's basically an urban legend.
Well, yeah, and let's talk about this whole urban legend thing, Nicole. So, in the short story, The Forbidden, it takes place in Liverpool. So, it takes place in the UK.
Like, not in Chicago like the movie, then.
The movie takes place in Chicago, Nicole.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, yes, the director and screenwriter, Bernard Rose, because he's also a Brit, so you gotta say it Bernard. You can't say Bernard. So it's Bernard Rose, yes, who directed Paper House, a weird little movie in 1988 about this little girl that can kind of connect with this sick little boy through, like, her artwork. We did watch it at one point. Yeah. It's very odd, though. It's kind of a, you know, an unusual little movie.
An unusual movie, yes.
And he also did Immortal Beloved in 1994 about Beethoven. He actually, how Bernard got his start, Nicole, he won a BBC amateur movie competition in 1975 at age 15. And then went on to be an assistant with Jim Henson, actually, on the final season of The Muppet Show and Dark Crystal. It's a little background on Bernard.
A little background on Bernard for you.
So Bernard, yes, to kind of localize this, he was doing, you know, some research and, you know, read the story. He's like, hey, you know, and he, I guess he visited Chicago. He's like, man, this would be a really good place to, you know, set, you know, like a movie, a story like this. Mm-hmm. He actually went to Clive Barker and said, hey, I'd like to make a movie out of this story you wrote called The Forbidden. And Clive Barker was like, yeah, okay. So
just like that.
Yeah, just like that. Apparently they had met before, so like they knew each other, and yeah. It was like, okay, yeah. So anyway, yeah, so they went ahead and did it. And Bernard, I guess, yeah, had visited Chicago. I don't know if he was necessarily scouting locations for the Forbidden adaptation at the time. But yeah, he liked, you know, the look of Chicago, and he asked like the drivers to take him to like some like dangerous areas, you know, in quotations, dangerous areas. But, you know, like, legitimately, you know, some dangerous areas, of course, you know. So, in the story, the character...
Helen
is actually doing research.
This is in the short story.
She's doing research, I believe, also, as a student on graffiti, not urban legends.
Oh, okay.
Because maybe in the UK... maybe urban legends are not as much of a thing as they are in the United States. But in the United States, urban legends are kind of a thing. You know, people know about them. It's a big deal. What is an urban legend, Nicole, really?
Well, everybody knows the story about, you know, the couple, like, making out in the car, and they hear screeches, and there's the hook man out there.
The hook man is out there.
And, like, urban legends like the Mothman or alligators in the sewers or... those are urban legends, you know, not proven to be real.
Yeah, and how they kind of describe them is it's like a story that's been kind of passed on, but it's always like you're just one person removed from the actual incident almost. You know, like, well, you know, like my cousin knows somebody who, you know, experienced this, and, you know, it's always something like that, you know, you know. You don't, it doesn't happen to you, but it happened, you know, like someone you know knows someone who it happened to, you know? So yeah, the whole urban legend thing is interesting. But as a result of it moving to Chicago, yes, Bernard thought, you know, it would be a good idea to change it to urban legends, kind of tie that in to the story of the Candyman, make the Candyman more of an urban legend. Whereas in like the story, The Forbidden, he's just kind of like a boogeyman, almost, that lives in this kind of like... It's essentially similar to the movie, where it's like sort of a housing project.
So lives in the area where they go to study the artwork.
Yeah, where she goes to study the graffiti. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, Bernard changing it to Chicago, to the United States, playing up on this urban legend situation. Let's get into the movie here, Nicole.
Okay.
Virginia Madsen plays Helen Lyle. She's married to Xander Berkeley, who plays Trevor Lyle. Virginia Madsen was kind of discovered by David Lynch for the 1984 movie Dune. Then she was also in some other ones, Nicole. The Hot Spot in 1990. Highlander 2, which is just abysmal dreck, in 1991. The Prophecy in 1995, Sideways in 2004. Xander Berkeley, he's been in like everything.
Everything.
He's been in absolutely everything. He has something like 239 listed roles on IMDb, so he's been in a lot of stuff. Virginia Madsen, her character Helen, her student friend, I don't know, they're doing the thesis together is what it seems like, right?
Yeah, they're writing the thesis together, so they're like picking urban legends as their thesis.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is, her friend is played by Casey Lemons, who plays Bernadette, the character Bernadette, and was also a sidekick kind of character to Jodie Foster in The Silence of the Lambs. And something interesting that I just found out doing research about Casey Lemons was that she directed and wrote the movie Eve's Bayou in 1997. I had no idea. I was like, wow, you know, like, and now I kind of want to watch that movie again. But she also did a movie called Harriet last year about Harriet Tubman. So Yeah, interesting that interesting. Yeah, she's done more, you know, like writing and directing now. Those two, essentially, they go to this housing project in Chicago. What was the housing project called, Nicole?
It was called Cabrini Green.
Yeah, Cabrini Green, and it's kind of a notorious location over the years.
I think that
in Chicago,
they still hadn't torn it down when we first moved here.
Yeah, like part of it, I think, had started to get torn down, but not all of it. They shot apparently for 3 days at Cabrini Green, and there were like Tony Todd, who plays the Candyman in the movie. We haven't gotten to that yet, but he said that there were five gangs that were operating within like Cabrini Green, and they were paid and really kind of just hired so that they wouldn't, you know, like cause trouble or anything during the production. But near the end of the production, then they actually like found like a bullet like that had been shot into one of the trailers, and they were like, okay, you know, it's a good thing we're kind of done, because they apparently did have like police, like snipers and things like that in the area to kind of, you know, keep an eye on the situation just in case. But yeah, Cabrini Green was constructed between 1942 and 1962, so it had been around for a long time. In 1974, the sitcom Good Times, which was Jimmy Walker, Dynamite. Have you ever heard that?
I remember that reference.
Yeah. That was apparently, it was never mentioned that it was, you know, supposed to be set at Cabrini Green, but
that
in the intro,
was there.
The intro to the show, apparently Cabrini Green was just shown, like, in the intro to the show. So you just kind of assume that, you know, that's what was going on. But yeah, it was a housing project in Chicago that then later demolition began on it in 1995. And then it was the last, like, high-rise building was finally demolished in 2011. So really not that long ago. But yeah, apparently there is still some, like, smaller, you know, like, buildings are still there. But the high-rises are no longer there, which is kind of what, you know, what stood out about it, what was famous about it, kind of the high-rise project buildings. In Chicago kind of lore and legend, in a different housing project, there was a death involving a real person named Ruthie Mae McCoy, in 1987, who was killed. And in the movie then, this is kind of like, that story is kind of put to use here in the movie, because there's a character, Ruthie Jean, who is killed, and it's before the movie begins. We don't see it on camera or anything, but this is kind of the story.
They tell the story.
Yes, they kind of go to check out and investigate, you know, as part of a Candyman-related killer.
Right, right.
So they go there to investigate this, and the similarity is that in the movie, Helen kind of describes to Bernadette that the bathroom medicine cabinet, there's like a hole behind it. So if you remove the medicine cabinet, you can go through into the next apartment if you just like knock out the other medicine cabinet.
So you take your medicine cabinet out and it's facing another medicine cabinet.
There's just another medicine cabinet.
That just seems like poor planning.
Yeah, poor planning. Like, a pretty serious security risk,
pretty
I would
serious,
say.
I don't think that'd make me feel very comfortable.
No, absolutely not. But apparently, yes, that's how she was killed in 1987 in that sort of situation. So that was then used in the screenplay in the movie as well. So they go to this, they go to Cabrini Green to investigate and try to gather details for their thesis about the urban legend, specifically Candyman. They end up talking to the character Anne Marie, who's played by Vanessa A. Williams, not Vanessa Williams, the pop singer who also did some acting. This is Vanessa A. Williams, who was in Melrose Place for like a season or two or something, and has done other things as well.
Right. So she plays a young mother.
Yes, a single mother.
A young mother, and you know, so she lives there, and she's telling the story of Ruthie to these girls. I guess they're not girls. I guess they're women.
These ladies, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, Ruthie Jean has a son, a baby, Anthony. And yes, as we said, she was a single mother. And yes, on the production, they said, you know, like at Cabrini Green, that was pretty common. There were a lot of like independent, you know, single mothers who were, you know, like trying hard to, you know, kind of just make ends meet and keep things going. early in the research as well. The character Helen is doing some, like, just typing up some information or something like that, doing some research in one of the classrooms at the school she attends. The University of Chicago in Illinois, I believe is what it is, right? UIC Chicago,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So
she's listening to a recording, and I think the custodians hear it.
Yep, one of the custodians overhears it, and, you know, she starts talking about Candyman, and, hey, you're looking into Candyman. My friend, you know, knows about Candyman. You want to talk to her? And Helen's like, well, yeah. So, yes, she brings in her friend. And
they're, again, once removed.
Yeah, yep. So they start talking about, you know, what happened to Ruthie Jean, really, is what kind of the story is. So, yeah, and that is in the story, The Forbidden, but it's a little different than it was. And everyone in The Forbidden is very secretive, it seems like. Like, they'll reveal these details, but then they're like, you know, they don't really want to say anything else then. And they just kind of clam up. And Helen becomes very frustrated, starts to think maybe it's all just nonsense and not real. That does happen a little bit.
That happens a little bit, but I think that people just don't want to tell too much about it because they're afraid, because they believe in the urban legend.
Yeah, exactly. And what you have in Candyman then is sort of this fake Candyman and the real Candyman. And there's a character named Jake who's played by Dewan Guy, who is, he's a little boy. I don't know how old he is, maybe 10? What do you think? Jake is 10?
Oh, yeah, if
something
that,
like that. Maybe if, not even that.
If
yeah.
that.
So he tells Helen about this instance involving a bathroom, like an outdoor kind of, you know, restroom area. And he's telling the story about this boy that he heard about.
Or did he know this?
Or he knew, he knew it. I don't know if he knew. I think he just, I think, again, it was like a once removed kind of situation almost. So, yes, this boy was, his mother was shopping like at a nearby grocery store, and she said, you know, he was throwing a fit, I guess, and she said, ah, you know, get out there and use that restroom outside. So, the boy goes out there, and then we're spoiling everything here in Candyman, by the way, because this movie is from 1992, so you'll just have to deal with it. But he uses the bathroom, and apparently something terrible happens in the bathroom because they're screaming, there's panic, and a tough guy is how Jake describes him. This tough guy
goes to
like investigate what goes on, and he came out, and his hair turned white, Nicole. It turned white, just like that.
Just like that.
There's a big tough guy. He runs over to check it out. Come out of there shaking and crying. He only been in there 5 seconds. Come out of there, and his hair turned white. I mean, it turned white, just like that.
And, yeah, so they go in, and they discover what happened to this boy. And apparently, his genitals were removed and, like, flushed down the toilet.
Oh,
so he was,
man.
Like, you know, still alive, but in there, like, holding himself. And not a pretty scene. And they do kind of show it in the movie. It's one of the more graphic scenes in the movie. They don't show the incident happening. They show the aftermath.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and in the movie, like, Helen goes to this, like...
Yeah, to the where it happens.
To where it happens. And she goes in there, and, you
because Helen, she... And Bernadette is not with her anymore at this point. This is, like, a second visit when she meets Jake.
So Helen goes in, and let me tell you, that place is not where anybody wants to be.
Oh, my God, it's filthy.
It's filthy.
You should see the place.
You know, like, public restrooms are not pretty.
No.
But this was... This was disgusting.
This was exceptionally bad.
That's right.
Yes.
And she ended up on the floor, and I about had a heart attack.
Well, yes. Now, and this pops up a couple times, because there's graffiti in the movie as well, but that's not what the research is about. But they do take pictures of the graffiti.
Yeah, they do take pictures of it.
One thing that pops up a couple of times is sweets to the sweet.
Yeah.
Right? And that is from Hamlet, actually, is where that comes from. So, sweets to the sweet. They see it in the apartment complex, the Cabrini Green project complex. And then it's also in the bathroom. And it kind of like leads her to this stall in the back of the bathroom. And it, yeah, it is. It looks gross. It just looks gross. So there's like an arrow pointing down to the final stall, the final toilet. She kicks open the door, and there's the arrow. So she lifts the lid, and inside the toilet, Nicole, bees everywhere in the toilet. And at that point, I run out of the theater. That's it for me, Nicole.
So the story, though, of how the Candyman.
Yeah, why don't we talk about that, and then we'll go back to the fake Candyman versus the real Candyman.
Right. So the urban legend was, I guess it was back in the 1800s.
Yeah, I think it was 1890, I believe is how it's described. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess Candyman, you know, was a real man.
A real man. Candyman was a real man.
He was a real man, and he had a lover, and I guess her dad.
Well, like, yeah, he was the son of a slave, so he's black. Candyman is black, the son of a slave, but his father became very well off because he had developed some sort of device that for the mass producing of shoes is how it's described in the movie.
Okay.
So yes, then you know, like he's well off. So Candyman, as a boy, is sent to like you know all the best schools. He's like you know. Really well educated. He's a fantastic artist. So he's then commissioned by some sort of wealthy, well-to-do white man who has a daughter to do a painting of his daughter.
Oh, that's right. It's a virginal painting.
Yes, a virginal painting. And then what happens, of course, Nicole, is what?
Well, then she's not a virgin anymore.
Oh, my God. And yeah, so, you know, 1890 or whatever this, you know, event takes place. Yeah.
So basically, they cut off the guy's hand.
Yes.
And they smear him with
honey.
Smear him with
there
honey.
There's some beehives nearby. And they smash the honeycomb. They smear the honey all over poor Candyman. The bees attack Candyman, sting him, kill him.
Kill him, right.
So, yeah, that's the origin story of Candyman. So that's why, you know, the bees tying in is important. Yeah.
I don't remember when he gets the hook as a hand.
The hook, I think maybe they give that to him too. I don't know exactly like where that comes from.
I don't remember that exact moment, but I think they did.
I don't know if they jammed the hook in there too. I feel like they did. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, they gave him a weapon.
Yeah, they gave him a weapon. Yeah.
So anyway, then the modern day version of Candyman, if you say his name five times while looking in the mirror, he'll gut you from groin to gullet.
That's right, Nicole. And yeah, he pops out of the mirror or nearby the mirror and kills you. So don't say Candyman in the mirror five times. Because you're risking everything.
That's right. And in the movie, Helen does it.
Well, we'll get to that later, Nicole. Shoot! Well, she had actually done that before this. But she does do it. And Bernadette, who's the smart one, she stops at four. She doesn't say it a fifth
That's
time.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
She does stop.
Bernadette had some brains.
She shouldn't even have done it one or two times.
No.
No. You're just courting. You're courting problems.
Yes, absolutely. So don't do that unless you want trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
But, so back to this restroom. We're not done in this filthy restroom yet, Nicole.
Okay.
So then,
I'm trying to steer you away from the bad restroom.
There's a man enters claiming to be Candyman. He's a man.
Yeah.
He has a hook that he's holding.
So what does he say to her?
He's holding a hook. And he has some other, like, hoodlums that come in with him. And Helen's like, oh, you know, like, excuse me, I'm sorry, you know, I'll just get out of here. And of course, you know, they stop her. And yes, so there's a line that they say in the movie. I don't remember if I've mentioned this in the podcast before. I may have at one point. There's a line in the movie, and he delivers it here.
It
gets better later. Later on, we'll get to that. But he says, I believe at this point he says, I hear you're looking for Candyman, bitch.
But he says it so good.
Yes. And so he's then, you know, taking on the identity of Candyman. So in essence, this is just like a gang leader who's become the Candyman to just kind of strike fear into the hearts of people in Cabrini Green.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Candyman then, they don't kill Helen. They hit her with the hook. She's got like this gigantic black eye. It looks terrible. She ends up getting rescued. But then here's where it gets good. They take her to the police station and she's at the classic lineup setting where she's supposed to choose the person who did this to her out of a lineup. And this is where it gets good because one person after another, step up and say the line. So they step up and, all of these people, they just kind of deadpan the line. We hear you looking for Candyman, bitch. And it's funny.
It is really hilarious.
And it's not funny. But for me, just hearing it and the repetition and just how kind of dead they are when they say it is just, I don't know, it's very amusing to me. It always has been. I just like that part of the movie.
We're here looking for Candyman, bitch.
Step back. Number four, step forward and set a line.
We're here looking for Candyman, bitch.
Step back. Number five, step forward and say the line.
We hear you looking for Candyman, bitch.
Step back, take him out.
You always do like repetition.
But the movie is not funny. Candyman is not a funny movie at all. I don't want to give that kind of impression. But that situation to me is amusing. The mm-hmm. fact that they have to come out and say this line and deadpan it.
Right.
And yeah, just the line in general, I guess. At this point, she identifies the person who did it. Candyman has been captured by the police. She goes out and she tells Jake. And Jake's upset because he's like, Candyman's going to get me. And she's like, yeah. No.
Well, Jake, he was blabbing his mouth.
Candyman is not real. Candyman is just a story like Dracula or Frankenstein. And Jake says, Candyman's not real? Yeah. So, then Helen, totally satisfied. It's like, hey, this is great. This happened. We can use this for the urban legend story. Everything's going to be fine. They have some film that's been rescued from the camera that was damaged. But Bernadette says, hey, some of the film was salvaged,
And gave her slides.
Yeah, gave her slides of the developed film. And here, take a look at these slides. She's going to her car in the parking lot, in the parking garage. And she hears in the distance, Nicole. And this is 45 minutes into the movie or something, yeah. Finally, that the real Candyman,
so she hears, Helen.
Yes. And Tony Todd plays Candyman. Tony Todd, too, has been in just a ton of things.
Just everything.
He has been in, I wrote down his two, I think, I can't find it. But his was 200 plus roles, 231 roles. At press time,
yeah.
When we're recording this, Tony Todd. He was in the 1990 Tom Savini remake of Night of the Living Dead, which is not terrible. He was in the Final Destination series as kind of the doomsayer in that,
yeah.
Which is kind of a good fit for him, too.
Or wasn't because he the Grim Reaper? I always thought of him
as... Not really. They may have alluded to that. I'm not sure. But he was always kind of kind of the doomsayer that this is what's going to happen to you. This is what's happening. Tony Todd has this it's a fantastic voice.
Oh.
This very
resonant
voice. Like baritone probably is how you would describe it. But yeah, just fantastic. Just a fantastic voice, Nicole, from Tony Todd. And yes,
Helen.
And she's like, what? And turns around and he's off in the distance at the other end of the parking garage mm-hmm. structure. And then he just kind of keeps talking to her. And he has this way, Candyman has this way of kind of hypnotizing Helen. Really with his voice, just kind of soothing her. Helen. And it's creepy, but also there's this very romantic element to it.
Well, yeah.
Sort of a seductive element to it, I guess.
Well, I feel kind of he's seducing her because he wants her to believe in him. He wants her to believe in the urban legend because that's how he's gaining power.
Right.
Kind of I think of as like Greek gods. Once you believe in them, they gain power from they your belief.
Gain power, Nicole.
Yeah, I think so, right?
But no, yes, you're absolutely right. That's what's going on here. Yeah, because the real Candyman, who's the fake Candyman, has been captured. So like people are going to stop believing in him. So mm-hmm. what he has to do is kind of like use Helen as like this human earthly vessel to kind of like continue the story of the Candyman to keep him alive.
Right.
And yeah, it's weird that like this that kind of story element is also used in Freddy versus Jason later on down the line. They kind of stole that from Candyman, really, because that's what Freddy wants Jason to do for him. Because he's like, you know, weak and dying off. Enough Freddy versus Jason. We'll talk about that eventually.
You don't need to change it into Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah, let's get back to Tony Todd as the Candyman. But yeah, he's just fantastic. Fantastic character. And Tony Todd then, yes, kind of hypnotizes Helen. Helen ends up back in Anne Marie's home. And things are a mess. You hear screaming, crying. Helen has blood all over her.
Yeah, Helen has blood all over. The dog is dead.
Yeah, Anne Marie's dog, who's a big Rottweiler, its head has been severed and is just lying in a pool of blood in the middle of the floor. And this, too, is pretty graphic. Like, and it's always like you see the aftermath of it. You don't see it happen, but still the aftermath of it is pretty shocking. Then you go in and there's like a playpen, like a kid's playpen, a child, mm-hmm. a baby's playpen. And Anne Marie is, you know, like, really upset.
Hysterical,
obvious, upset. Like, there's blood there as well. But there's no evidence of Anthony having been harmed. There's just blood everywhere. So she immediately, you know, like, goes after Helen when Helen reveals herself. Because somehow she's in the apartment, so Helen must be responsible.
Right.
And she's got blood all over
her. Like, where's my baby?
Exactly. Where's my baby? Come on. And Anne Marie attacks Helen, but then Helen grabs a meat cleaver, gains the upper hand, and kind of, like, starts threatening her with it. Then the police barge in, and Helen looks like an absolute psychopath at this point.
Yeah, she looks like a lunatic that's harmed a baby and killed a dog.
Yeah, well, yeah, the baby's missing, but the dog is definitely dead. And she's threatening a meat cleaver. She's over Anne Marie with a meat cleaver, looking like she's ready to kill her.
Right.
So the police take her away. And at this point, yeah, like the movie takes this like really terrible turn because like Helen becomes the suspect in all of this. No one believes her anymore. Her husband
like commits her basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, we should talk about him. We didn't really mention him. He's not a doctor.
A professor.
He's a professor at the college.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that one of his students is in love with him, and you know, of course, he ends up being, you know, a cheater.
Yes,
and
a little sketchy, right? Like they never really come right out and say that, but it's definitely something
going on. He's always working late, never home, so basically. She's actually, let's rewind a bit, she's in jail.
Yeah.
And calls him and he doesn't answer.
He doesn't answer, yeah. So he's somewhere in the middle of the night, 3 a.m. in the morning or something like that.
Yeah. So he just tells her he was sleeping.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Whatever, Trevor.
We know what you were doing.
Yeah. But yeah, so she's committed. And during the period when she's committed, like, deaths still happen around her. Like, she's talking to one of the doctors, and in the room, when she's in the room alone with the doctor, being sort of like, I don't know, I guess her sanity's being gauged or something, Candyman appears then and kills the doctor.
Yeah.
So again, she's then blamed for this death as
well. Yeah, so she looks like she just killed this doctor because, of course, he uncuffed her to make her feel more comfortable, and then he was murdered.
He got murdered, and at this point during the movie, I think I said to you, well, you know, like, she's done. You know, like,
this is all her fault.
Yeah, now. She's not getting out again. But she escapes and ends up back at, like, her apartment, her condo, whatever it is, and at some point, I don't know the exact period of events here, but yes, Bernadette is killed. Her friend Bernadette is killed by the Candyman. And
because Bernadette believes.
Yes.
Yeah. She's a believer.
Yes.
So she wasn't a skeptic like Helen.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah. And she ends up, you know, escaping, like we said, and, you know, getting back to Cabrini Green to kind of try to figure out and solve so she can, like, clear her name, yeah, really. She's got to prove somehow, find Anthony, prove somehow that she's not, you know, responsible for all of this. She does find Anthony, and apparently this has been going on for like a month or something like that, and I never really thought about it before, but, you know, like, Anthony's in, like, seclusion with the Candyman for all this time, but there is the one scene where you see the Candyman feeding Anthony, like, honey. So I guess you just fed Anthony honey the whole time that this was going on to keep him healthy?
I mean, he fed him something, I guess.
I guess.
Well, and, like, back to the actual movie footage, like, seeing...
The movie footage.
Seeing Helen crawl through the bathroom, and then on the other side, there's graffiti art there of a man and having his mouth open.
Yeah.
And I always... That kind of gives me chills to see her crawling through that.
Right.
I don't know. There's something about that, those scenes there. It really is chilling to me to see her walking around.
It's very well done. And that's something that we were going to get to as well, because that is in the original story. They have, like, the, you know, kind of, like, the rundown, like, apartment complex and, you know, this project housing. And, yeah, she does, like, come out of, you know, out of a room through this hole, through this mouth, and then kind of, you know, sees it, you know. And so that is in, like, the story as well.
I always kind of think of it like she's entering another world there.
Yeah.
Like, through that portal.
Yeah.
And into candy, like, where the Candyman is.
And that's really supposed to be, like, the Candyman's face, you know, on this wall with its mouth open wide.
Screaming.
And, and then also in the movie, that is also in the story, like, the people who live there leave, like, candy.
Oh, yeah.
Wrapped candy, but with razor blades in the candy to, I guess, you know, like, kind of tempt Candyman. Here you go. Here's some candy. But it's got razor blades in it. So, like, if you eat it, you're going to, you know, like, hurt yourself and hopefully kill the Candyman with this candy. Yeah, that's in the short story as well.
I think you should be nicer to him, personally.
Yeah, just leave the Candyman alone.
I think you just need to leave that Candyman alone.
But that's another thing. Yeah, both of those things definitely tie into the Forbidden, the original short story as well. But yeah, so then, you know, Helen and the Candyman, they kind of have this, like, you know, this face-off situation where they meet again. And there's almost like this kind of like a waltz sequence, like they're waltzing and, like, dancing. There's the camera kind of spins around them, and it's like, again, like this kind of, you know, like, romantic situation almost.
Yeah. But, well, he's wooing her.
Yes, he's wooing her, Nicole. Wooing her.
Wooing.
Woo. Say woo again.
Woo.
So yeah, it ends up then. We'll kind of wrap up the movie portion here. Wraps up at the end. They're building, like, a giant, like, pile of kind of rubble to do, like, a bonfire.
They're going to do a bonfire.
A community bonfire kind of situation. And it ends up, turns out, that Anthony is put into the bonfire by Candyman.
Yeah.
And Jake sees this. Jake, the little boy who we mentioned earlier.
Oh, no. Jake sees Helen, like, with a hook.
Oh, okay.
Like, climbing, but he doesn't see her.
He doesn't see Helen. Well, that's,
he just sees the hook. So he thinks Candyman's in the pile.
Yes, because he sees the hook going in, and he's like, Candyman's in there. So, yes, they're going to burn the bonfire then.
Yeah.
Because Candyman is still in the pile of rubble. They want to get rid of Candyman.
Right.
Burn it. But, yeah, Helen is in there trying to rescue Anthony.
Right.
So they set it on fire. Helen's trying to escape with Anthony, but Candyman is in there as well.
Well, because Candyman wants Helen to be with him.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And basically die in the bonfire. But Helen has the fortitude to get out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that he keeps saying to kind of, like, he keeps saying, be my victim. That's his line that he keeps saying. Yeah. Because he wants Helen to be, like, with him, you know, as part of this legend.
Right.
And there's a reason for that. After Helen escapes, Helen does escape with Anthony, gets Anthony back to Anne-Marie.
Yeah.
And they see her. They see that she, you know, has done this, has, you know, saved Anthony. But at the very end, then, it's revealed that, you know, like, apparently Helen at least looks, resembles
the virginal daughter.
The virginal daughter, yeah. Yes, that Candyman was supposed to paint and fell in love with all those years ago.
Right.
So, yes, that's kind of the connection between Helen and Candyman.
Right.
Now, should we spoil the other part about what Helen? Should we spoil that part, Nicole?
Well, I don't see why not. We spoiled everything else. Since we spoiled everything else.
So there is a twist at the end involving Trevor and the girlfriend, the young lady that he's cheating with.
The student, basically. Yes, the student. His student.
Who are, they're now living together. And Trevor is actually, like, he seems really, like, torn up and upset about what's happened to Helen because she's dead.
I just think that he's actually just missing Helen because Helen made him dinner and did nice things for him. Fooled by him feeling bad. He's only feeling bad for himself.
He's just feeling bad for himself. Okay.
He's not feeling bad for Helen.
He's
feeling bad for himself.
Okay. So, yes. So what does he start doing, Nicole?
He's
locked himself in the bathroom because the girl's getting on his nerves, quite frankly.
And he's in the mirror and he says Helen.
He keeps saying Helen very slowly.
Yep.
And finally he gets to the fifth time, and what happens?
Helen visits him.
Helen appears.
Yeah.
So Helen kind of in essence is like a new urban legend, a new Candyman.
Right.
Yeah, so that's the wrap on Candyman.
That's the wrap on the Candyman movie.
That's everything. That's all we got.
I do have to say, since it's the early...
That's all we have.
Since it's the early 90s...
1992.
The movie is very 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Styles, you know, just the picture quality. It just looks 90s to me.
Yeah.
And just those big shoulder pads, and it's just 90s.
Yeah. Definitely.
Definitely. So, I don't know about you, but do you think that Helen just stole that baby and killed all those people? Or do you really believe in the Candyman?
Nicole, there's a Candyman. What are you talking about?
Or was Helen just crazy, stole a baby, and killed all those people?
No way.
I'm just putting that out there.
I think there's a Candyman.
This could have been all in Helen's, noggin.
In her noggin, huh?
It could have been.
You could argue that
this is all Helen.
Yep, you could definitely look at it that way. Now, let me give some financial stats before we forget.
You just completely totally skip it. You don't want to think about it because you're like,
I want there to be a Candyman. Yes,
I believe.
Absolutely. I believe. And you know what? There were sequels, Nicole. And Tony Todd was back as the Candyman.
Okay. So, Tony Todd's Candyman.
Come on. But yes, those were not done by Bernard.
I was just trying to open up a conversation.
No, I understand. I understand. But yeah, you could view it that way. Yes. But I think you're supposed to view it as the Candyman being real and kind of, you know, like, needing Helen, you know? I think that's what it's all about.
Okay.
So, the budget for Candyman was $8 to $9 million and ended up making $25.8 million.
I read everything with all these lines.
Look at this!
Everywhere.
Look at this mess I've got here.
Those notes are a mess.
This sheet of notes is terrible. But yeah, $25.8 million is what it made at the theater. So yeah, it did pretty well. That's not bad. It came out in October, so around Halloween season. It opened at number 4 with an opening of $5.4 million. Number 1 that weekend was Under Siege, starring Steven Seagal. Candyman's better than that. Last of the Mohicans was number 2. Number 3 was The Mighty Ducks. And number 5 was a movie called Consenting Adults, which I have no memory of at all.
You know, Last of the Mohicans was pretty good.
You like that one, huh?
I do like that one. Are you kidding? Daniel Day-Lewis, he's a pretty fantastic actor.
Are you kidding me, Craig? Also, in The Candyman, this is 1992, and on the Blu-ray, Scream Factory did a Blu-ray, and it's been out for a few years, I think. But On the, there are two discs in it. On the unrated version disc, there's a special feature, a bonus feature, and what is it called? It's called Urban Legend Unwrapping Candyman. And this was kind of an interesting one. It's two people, they have kind of a discussion about Candyman, the movie, on this special feature. And it is, I hope I don't pronounce her name wrong. I listened to her say it, and I told myself I was going to remember, but it is Tanana Reeve Dew is her name, I believe. She's a lecturer and author. And then Stephen Barnes is an author and screenwriter. These people, they're both black. So what they do is they talk about Candyman in 1992. And they talk about like how it was then compared to today. What they say is in 1992, there was kind of this like renaissance, black people starring in kind of like urban movies that were, you know, it was great. It was great to see. You know, this is something that, you know, kind of like equal representation at the box office. And what they're talking about is it's okay for Candyman to be a villain, because apparently the studio was very concerned that, you know, like Candyman being a villain, it being set kind of in this like urban area with a lot of black characters, and maybe like sort of shining this negative light on black people in Chicago. So the studio actually, Bernard, they sent Bernard to have like a meeting with the NAACP. And the people at with the NAACP at the time, they said, you know, like, we don't, you know, we don't really understand why we're even having this meeting. You know, this, to us, this just seems like good fun is what, you know, was, you know, quoted as them saying. So, and what they say then is, you know, because of this kind of renaissance and the equal representation, like I said, Stephen Barnes, he talks about how, you know, like at the time, you know, like Wesley Snipes was starring in a few different movies like White Men Can't Jump. He was in that one. He was in Passenger 57. So you have like heroic kind of black characters at the same time that you have this, you know, like villain kind of anti-hero horror character. And I think, you know, they talk about it at the time how, you know, like black audiences kind of loved having like, and what I think what they said was, you know, like, why can't, you know, a black person be kind of like a Freddy or a Jason, you know? So they kind of appreciated that, having like this black anti-hero as well. So having this kind of like equal representation in cinema at the time, they were, you know, they thought that was okay. But they did feel, they did mention, they feel like it's a movie about black people for white people, which, you know, they said that, you know, like there's, you know, like these days they would have like someone on set or someone in the room at the studio kind of talking about sensitivity a little bit and things like that. So maybe things didn't get, you know, like out of hand. Although they said, you know, overall, they didn't think that, you know, Candyman was, you know, too bad in most areas. You know, there were certain things that they kind of picked at. But it's definitely an interesting thing to look at as a special feature on the Blu-ray if you grab that. But yeah, definitely Candyman as this anti-hero seems to be, over the years, and now the fact that they're doing kind of this new version of Candyman is kind of like, you know, it's like this famous character now.
This
famous kind of anti-hero. So I think like, yeah, that the black community has more or less embraced Candyman as this, you know, this sort of horror villain over the years. And I think it's become more of a positive thing, thankfully.
Well, Helen turns into, you know, the urban legend at the end.
Yeah, an urban legend at the end as well, yeah. But, you know, really, that's just kind of a subplot, really, at the end. It's kind of a twist, yeah.
Well, and the fact that she shows up to, you know, take revenge on her husband.
Yeah. You know. Which is a little bit different. But, yeah, and I guess you could argue maybe that even takes away from, you know, like, the Candyman character if you wanted to. But hopefully not. Yeah, hopefully that's not too bad. The situation here being like in England, more it's like versus the US, like race versus class is kind of like the equivalent. Race in the US is kind of the equivalent to like a class system in the UK, really, is how they describe it. So the Forbidden, the original story where, you know, it wasn't about race at all, then, you know, like bringing it to the United States, setting it in urban Chicago, it just definitely becomes about race. That's just what happens, you know, in the movie here. The new version of Candyman is being done by black filmmakers. So yeah, we'll see what goes on with it. Yeah,
I'm excited to see the remake.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what direction they take in this remake or retelling or new story, whatever it may be. Yeah. We'll find out.
I'm hoping for, you know, just a new take on it. I like it when stories evolve.
I think we should also mention that there is kind of this Phantom of the Opera kind of element here too. That, like, it kind of ties into that. Like, the Phantom of the Opera, that story. Like, Candyman is not that different as far as, like, you know, kind of this, like, you know, villain sort of, you know, like, using, like, their kind of, like, powers to kind of, you know, like, I guess, hypnotize or, you know, like, sort of seduce, you know, this female character. So that, I think that's kind of an interesting tie-in, you know, with horror history. Mm-hmm. As far as the Phantom of the Opera character, this is kind of like a more, almost kind of like a modern take on that in a way. You have the Philip Glass score in the movie, which I think is fantastic. There are a lot of choral sections that kind of sometimes I'm not in the mood for. Recently, I've been complaining about, like, sort of like overbearing choral sections in some, like, scores and how it bothers me. So in this one, I was reminded that I was like, man, I could do a little bit less of the choral stuff and just stick with the music. Because I think, like, the electronic music is very creepy. And then you also have just kind of like the piano music that is utilized, which seems to be kind of like Helen's theme or something like that, that I think is also very creepy overall. Did you know, Nicole? There are a couple of did you know
moments. Coming up.
Yeah, here we go. That originally, Eddie Murphy was considered for the part of Candyman. And I don't know what happened. It was probably a monetary thing. But also they said, well, Eddie Murphy's only 5'9". Tony Todd is like 6'5". So definitely a little bit more imposing. And of course they can, you know, use camera tricks to make Eddie Murphy look a lot taller.
But Eddie Murphy, to me, is fun. And,
yes.
You know, like,
you're saying Tony Todd can't be fun?
I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, like, I feel like I don't know if I've ever seen Eddie Murphy in something that's not funny.
Yeah, and especially, this serious, like, you know, this is definitely, like, there's no humor in the Candyman character
right,
at all.
Right.
So and maybe it would have been an interesting thing to see, but I feel like Tony Todd probably worked much better.
And Tony Todd's voice saying, Helen, I mean, that's pretty... When you think of Candyman, it's kind of quintessential that you hear...
Yes.
The Helen.
Yes, Tony Todd's voice, yes. It's necessary. And then, also, Nicole, an unknown at the time, Sandra Bullock was in the running for the character of Helen.
Okay,
so
well,
it's a good thing that didn't happen. That was mean, Nicole. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, Craig.
Shame on you.
I don't have anything against it.
Poor little Sandy.
Craig.
Now, also in the movie, Nicole, there was a bee wrangler.
Oh.
Yeah. So, the bee wrangler, Nicole, was Norman Gary. And this is the second time that we've mentioned Norman Gary on the podcast because he was also the Bee Wrangler in 1976 on The Savage Bees. So he returns as a Bee Wrangler.
So he's a professional Bee Wrangler.
On the podcast. Yeah, he's a professional Bee Wrangler. And yeah, they talked about how, Virginia Madsen talks about how she felt very comfortable working with the bees. He had this, like, queen bee pheromone that he would just kind of, like, dab at the areas where he wanted the bees to be active. So, bees are crawling on her face, so he dabs some of this queen bee pheromone on her face.
Okay.
And they crawl around, and she said, it doesn't feel like you think it would. She said, because they've got furry little bodies.
Yeah.
So, she said, it feels like just like Q-tips, like, moving around on your face.
Uh-huh.
So she didn't really have any problems with it once she got accustomed to the bees.
Yeah.
Tony Todd also, You know, like he said that Norman Gary took him in the trailer where the bees lived because the bees had their own trailer. Tony Todd said it was bigger than his, of course. So the trailer with the bees, they went in and, you know, he was a little uncomfortable about it. You're like, oh, you know, there are bees everywhere in here. And Norman was like, no, you just kind of like, you just get to know them. And he
relax.
Said, you know, like he would name them. Yeah, this is like, this is Barry over here.
This is Barry.
This is Craig over here.
Barry,
Craig the bee.
Barry the bee.
Yeah. So, he would just kind of like name the bees and like give them identities. And Tony Todd said, you know, it kind of worked. Like he was kind of like, you'll be comfortable with some of these bees. So Tony Todd actually had worked into his contract that he would get a $1,000 bonus anytime that he was stung by a bee. Now, I don't know if this was over the period of all three Candyman movies that he did, or if it was just the first one.
This is interesting.
But over the course of all three Candyman movies, Tony Todd said that he was stung 26 times by bees over the course of all three movies.
So he made $26,000?
Yeah, so he made some money over the course of the movies.
Just from bee stings.
Just from the bee stings. So that's pretty good.
That's a good
thing to work into your contract.
Yeah.
All right, I'll work with these bees. But if I get stung,
you know,
you're
going to
pay me $1,000 each time.
That's pretty smart, though,
pretty
to
good.
Work in. But, like, maybe he just didn't have enough pheromone on.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, and there's, like, the scene where they, like, they're in Candyman's mouth.
Oh, that's
And
right.
they're legitimately in his mouth. And I don't think he got stung at that point, or not that he mentioned anyway. But they said that, yeah, they just kind of utilized a device inside of his mouth to kind of block his throat.
Okay.
So that nothing went down his throat or anything like that. But yeah, then he just kind of let them, you know, like crawl around in the front of his mouth.
I'm not afraid of bees, you know, at all. And I would like to have bees. But I don't know if I'd like them in my mouth.
Yeah, you might not want to have the bees in your mouth, huh?
I probably don't want them in my mouth. I'm not going to put them in there, let's just say.
Yeah, don't just put
bees
in your mouth,
Nicole. I'm just not
going to
put them in there.
Yeah, don't do that. Well, Nicole, I don't know. Is there anything else we need to talk about Candyman? I guess the most important thing, because this is a cure for the common Craig, we need to talk about whether or not we're going to amass or murder Candyman.
Well, I feel like we gotta amass it.
Well, yeah, come on.
Come on.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, had you not seen it for a while? How many times have you seen Candyman?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Three or four times,
Three or
probably.
Four times, okay.
But yeah, it's been several years.
Several years. You enjoyed it?
I did.
It was a good experience?
I don't know if I've actually read the Clive Barker short story, though.
Yes.
So I might have to do that.
Maybe you can read it. Yeah. Like I said, the movie expands on it. It's different. The location is different, so that plays a factor.
I mean, I've read...
There are no racial elements. That's a factor.
Yeah. I've read a lot of Clive Barker, but I have not read a lot of the short stories. I've mostly read the novels.
Okay. Candyman, I would also amass it. It's very good. And it's a movie that I feel like actually you were kind of affected by it. I think you were kind of disturbed by the movie after this viewing for like a day or something like that.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. You got kind of in this weird mood or something. I think you were kind of upset. But Candyman, it's a movie I think that a lot of times I don't give enough credit to. And I feel like it's well done. It's well done overall. You know, and things in 1992 versus things in 2020, maybe some of the racial elements could have been better, you know. Yeah, that's probably true. But for me, you know, as a white person, that this movie is about black people, made for a white person, I guess it was made for me, Nicole. So, anyway, I do enjoy it. I think it's a good horror movie. Yeah, the Candyman is a fantastic anti-hero. Yeah, it's definitely a great character that has this that you know origin story that is interesting and yes, then becomes this urban legend. The whole Candyman, fake Candyman versus the real Candyman. I like that element. And yeah, there's a lot of imagery that's pretty disturbing in the movie.
I do wish, like, I know. I'd like the pre-story.
The origin story?
I really enjoy the origin story. And I kind of wanted more.
You wanted more of that.
I would like to see more of the origin story. And if it's like the same Candyman in this new movie, that would be kind of interesting to hear more of the origin story.
I see. I think in one of the sequels, maybe the first sequel, maybe they do like actually show what happens to the Candyman kind of in like a flashback sequence. You know, the second movie, I don't remember it being great. And I don't know if I've ever seen the third one. But, yeah, I like the first one, and the other ones, I don't know. Okay. You know, yeah. But I feel like that is shown in one of them. Unless, like, just, like, the telling of the story in this first movie is so vivid that, like, I think I've seen it. You know, I don't know, honestly. I'd have to rewatch the second movie to find out, I guess. But, yeah, that is possible. Maybe I've just dreamed that I've seen it because the story is... Yeah, so good in the original movie here from 1992, Nicole.
Okay.
Candyman, we're both going to amass it. And yeah, worth checking out. And if you haven't seen it, we've spoiled the movie here. So,
but you should still go watch it.
You should still watch it.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good movie to check out. And they're doing this new Candyman. And maybe, you know, so you want to compare those two.
You got to compare the two.
Maybe you want to compare them. Yeah. All right, Candyman, Nicole, one thing we did not mention about Candyman, and I can't believe you didn't remember this, is in kind of the opening sequence, there's an opening kind of prologue sequence almost, where Bernadette is interviewing, or maybe it's Helen. Helen is interviewing they're both interviewing people, but Helen gets the story about the Candyman. Helen's interviewing a student. And she's telling the story about how, you know, like, yeah, once removed again. And it's the story of the Candyman. And the bad boy boyfriend in this prologue is played by, do you remember?
No.
Ted Raimi.
Oh, that's right.
Ted Raimi, the brother of Sam Raimi, the director of the Evil Dead series, yeah. Of course. Yeah, Ted Raimi pops up in this in the beginning.
I like it when Ted Raimi pops up in things.
Yeah.
You know, he was in Xena, Warrior Princess,
sure.
You know, as a regular.
Yeah.
And
he does things in the Evil Dead movies,
exactly.
Too. You know, he helps out in those. He's done a lot of things over the years.
He pops up in a lot of, Sam Raimi movies.
Yeah.
As a...
yeah, he pops up as a character in things here and there. Yeah.
So I enjoy a Ted Raimi pop-up.
Ted Raimi appearance here and there. I can't believe you didn't remember that.
I forgot.
The fact that he's kind of like this bad boy boyfriend. Come on, that should have been right up your alley. And yeah, just seeing Ted Raimi as kind of this like bad boy is kind of like amusing. He's wearing like a leather jacket, but you know, it still looks like Ted Raimi. So like, it's kind of funny.
And that makes me happy to remember that.
So that's another funny bit if you like Ted Raimi in the movie, I guess, along with We hear you looking for Candyman, bitch.
That was funny. Yeah.
Be my victim. I am the writing on the wall, the whisper in the classroom. Without these things, I am nothing. So now I must shed innocent blood.
Nicole, this is our closing to the Summer of Clive Candyman episode. This is our closing, Nicole.
Okay, closing the Candyman.
Closing out the Candyman here. Nicole liked the Candyman. I liked the Candyman. Tony Todd was stung 26 times. What is... No, that was in the... They said snakes sting. That was Lair of the White Worm. So we're saying the right thing. The bees do sting. Yeah.
Bees do sting.
Yes, the snakes do not. They bite.
Bees do not bite.
No, bees sting. So let's talk about something here that caught my eye, Nicole. And then we're going to get into some sad news. But first we'll get into something that caught my eye. Nicole's so upset about the sad news that's coming. We've done a couple of these episodes on the Vestron Video Collector's Series.
Yeah.
Of Blu-ray releases by Lionsgate on home video, Nicole.
Okay.
As of that last episode that we did, on Chopping Mall. We've done The Lair of the White Worm, and we've done Chopping Mall so far in this series. Well, as of that last one, I think I mentioned in one of those episodes that, like, I think that, like, the line was dead. They weren't going to do any more movies.
Aww.
Yeah. But after, like, maybe a year or two, maybe a year and a half hiatus, they're resurrecting, Nicole, resurrecting the line with two new releases.
What are
in the Vestron Video Collector series coming in September, Nicole.
Okay.
So, one of them is Little Monsters, starring Fred Savage. I'm glad we said that at the same time. Fred Savage and Howie Mandel in Little Monsters. And then they're also releasing... Oh, go ahead, Nicole.
I had a huge crush on Fred Savage.
Oh, my God.
Huge.
And why did you have such a crush on him? Was it the Wonder Years?
Wonder Years, Princess Bride, Little Monsters.
Oh, my God.
The Wizard?
Come
on, Craig.
I love Fred Savage.
I had a huge crush on Fred Savage.
Weird. I feel like a much better crush is Jennifer Jason Leigh, but that's just my opinion.
Whatever.
Now, they're also releasing the David Cronenberg movie, Shivers, which I'm glad to see is coming out, because the only version that's out is this old DVD, and it's not very good. It's just like, the quality's just not very good. Shivers, also known as They Came From Within. So I'm looking forward to that one coming out. That's great news. The Vestron Video Collector's series.
Yeah, I'm excited to see both of those.
Back from the dead, resurrected for movie nerds like me, Nicole.
Yes.
Good for...
Only you, not me.
No, not you. Me. Now some sad news, Nicole.
I don't want to hear any sad news.
Sad news. Over this past weekend, as of this recording, over this past weekend, there were a few deaths.
Oh.
Olivia de Havilland passed away, Nicole. She passed away, and I think she was, like, 104. I saw one report that said 104, the other one said 105. So, yeah, IMDb actually says 104, so 104 years old. She was
A centurion.
Yes, born in 1916. She was in Gone with the Wind, of course, in a movie called The Snake Pit, which is pretty good. The Adventures of Robin Hood back in 1938. The Heiress in 1949. So Olivia de Havilland has certainly been in a lot of things over the years. And it is, you know, one of those weekends where three people pass away. And, you know, they say, like, these things happen in threes. Regis Philbin also passed away. Did you not know that?
I didn't hear that. No.
So Regis Philbin also passed away. Do you remember back when, like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was, like, a big thing?
Yeah.
And, like, I tried to get on the
show. You were almost on the show.
I tried to get on the show with Regis Philbin.
Yeah.
So, I took, like...
And your mom loved Regis and Kathy Lee.
Oh, yeah, she did. So, Regis Philbin, I tried to get on the show, and I took, like, a test and, like, a couple of tests, and I passed the tests to get onto the show. But I just never got the call back, unfortunately.
Yeah,
never got the call back on it.
You could have been on.
Oh, man, it was close. And did you know, Nicole? Here's another did you know. Did you know, Nicole, that kind of, I think, one of the things that inspired me to try to get on the show was because there was a million-dollar question. Like, the million-dollar question was one, and I was like, oh, my God. And the guy didn't get it right or something. And I was like, I would have gotten that right. Because the question was about, like, some sort of, like, I don't remember how the question was phrased. Sort of like a debilitating, sort of overwhelming sense of, like, nausea or something that happens when you're, like, looking at certain pieces of art. And apparently, like, this is called, and I knew this because of a Dario Argento movie.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm describing the condition properly, but it's something like that, involving artwork and feelings of
sickness. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So, yes, there's a Dario Argento movie that is actually called The Stendhal Syndrome.
Yes.
And I knew that, and I was like, oh my God, I would have won $1 million, Nicole.
Because you watch movies.
Because of Dario Argento.
Yes.
Yes. So... Yeah, see, all these things, even Regis Philbin and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire ties back into horror. Everything ties back into horror, Nicole. And then, also over the weekend, John Saxon, who we've been talking about over the past few episodes. Like, a few episodes we've talked about him now. He was in Blood Beach, unfortunately for John Saxon. But he was also in The Bees in, that episode that we talked about, The Bees. He was in that one. And, John Saxon's been in a lot of horror things over the years. He was in Dario Argento's Tenebrae. And he was Nancy's father, Heather Langenkamp's father, in the original A Nightmare on Elm Street. And he's done a lot of horror things. He was in Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee back in the day. So, John Saxon, he died of, I believe, pneumonia in Tennessee. Over the weekend. I think I saw two different ages for him, too. 82 years old or 83 years old. So, John Saxon, we lost him as well. So some sad news there. I'm sorry. I really brought Nicole down now. She's really upset. All right. Where can they find us, Nicole?
On Facebook, Chris.
We'll bounce out of the sad doldrums here.
Okay.
On Facebook.
Facebook.
Where can they find us on Facebook? On the page, A Cure. For the Common Craig, Nicole.
That's right. Twitter.
Twitter. They can find us at Common Craig.
Instagram.
Instagram. What's that? Well, they can find us there at Cure for the Common Craig.
And our website.
We have a website? So you go to the website. You click on a button on the splash page that says A Mass or Murder. It takes you to a list of all the episodes. Then you, the listener, one by one, you go down that list.
You can listen to
listening to all of the episodes, every single one. You send us comments. You send us some feedback. And what might happen, Nicole?
You know,
we might talk about your feedback on the show, and you might get
a sticker.
You might get a Cure for the Common Craig logo sticker.
They're pretty cool, again.
They're pretty cool, Nicole.
And who drew these?
I don't know. I'm kidding. It's best friend Stacy that did those. So, yes, send some comments, send some feedback, and you might just get one of these stickers.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, Nicole, the Summer of Clive continues in our next episode, unless something terrible happens. That's the idea.
I'm pretty excited about this.
That it's going to continue. So the next one we're going to do, Nicole, I believe, is that movie that we watched at some sort of date.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Nightbreed.
Nightbreed. Yes. Nightbreed. We're going to watch that one. And there are two different...
But there's a twist. We're going to do a twist.
There are two different versions of this movie. Actually, there's like three, really, I think. But a few years ago, Scream Factory, they released a nice, like, collector's Blu-ray package with the original version of Nightbreed and a Clive Barker director's cut of Nightbreed.
Right.
So we're going to watch both of them. We're kind of going to compare the differences. And we'll talk about the novel on which the movie Nightbreed is based. Cabal. We'll talk about that as well a little bit. Compare that. And did you know, Nicole, that Nightbreed was directed by Clive Barker himself?
Yes, I did know that.
Yeah, because it's the director's cut. We talked about that. Yeah. Anyway, Nightbreed, that's probably going to be the next episode. And then after that, we hope to do two more Barker
Summer of Clive continues
episodes. Say that again, Nicole. I like how you say it.
Summer of Clive continues.
Yes. Yes, it does. All right, Nicole. Did you have a good time talking about the Candyman?
Yeah. How about you?
I did too.
Good.
Okay.
See you later.
Good night. Where's Poppy?
She's in bed.
Good night.
Helen, I